You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
So, we got a short review for you this week. what are we smoking this week, Brad?
Well, I'll tell you when pigs fly.
Yep, it is the Kentucky Fire Cured Flying Pig.
Yeah, and this is the first of the Kentucky Fire Cured cigars that I've had the opportunity to smoke, and I've got to say that, you know, I've heard some other people's opinions that, you know, they light it up and they're like, all right, they would equate this basically into biting into raw charcoal.
I've heard this, and it's like, you want to know what it tastes like? Take a thing of charcoal, wrap it in a leaf, and smoke it, is what one of the first descriptions I hear. But
to me, I don't get that.
Yeah,
you know, for me, this cigar, you know, I mean, we've talked previous episodes and segments and stuff, so people know I'm pretty big into smoking, barbecuing, low and slow method. And, you know, this cigar right here reminds me of camping, of smoking barbecue, and just being outdoors.
Yeah, definitely has. I mean, the reason why it's called the fire cured is it contains, you know, most tobacco is air cured, and this actually contains fire cured tobacco from Kentucky. So it gives it a very smoky flavor. It's very different than a normal cigar. Like, even when you unwrap it, it smells like you're sitting around a campfire. And it's got a very different taste to it. It definitely picks up the hickory and, like I said, that different fire, whatever woods use to cure it. But
anybody that's been around a barbecue or, you know, just a campfire and you throw an oak log or a hickory log or something and, you know, you get that. Or after, you know, the initial fire and you're left with just the coals, that aroma of the woods and the fire, that's what I get out of this. And, you know, even being around a campfire, you know, you can still, you know, taste some of the subtleties of the smoke and everything else when you're burning a hardwood. You know, so, I mean, it just, you know, to me, I don't attribute this to the harshness of, you know, charcoal or anything.
Not at all. I mean, it's definitely a different taste. It doesn't taste like a normal cigar I've had, but it's, you know, it's different, but it's enjoyable.
I tell you what this cigar does need, though. The cigar needs a good, smooth bourbon, because I will tell the smoky effects, like, you know, people, you know, one of the coveted, you know, bourbons that I keep is the Woodford Reserve, the double oaked, because of that oak flavor and the smokiness of this cigar and everything. I think if you just took a nice bourbon, it would complement perfectly.
I mean, like, I end up going to an event at a cigar shop over Marietta, and I actually won a box of these in a raffle. So, yeah, like I said, I've smoked a couple of these now, and we had made some barbecue chicken last night, and this was an excellent thing to smoke around the grill. I mean, it really complements, you know, a nice, you know, barbecue as well. If you're somebody who wants to have a little pre-dinner smoke to wake up your taste buds before you eat.
I mean, yeah, and you know, for folks, you know, the Flying Pig, it's the, you know, it's a 4 1/8 by 60 ring gauge. And, you know, looking at the cigar, you're like, oh, this is going to be a 30-minute smoke. No, it is not. It's going to be more like an hour to maybe even an hour and a half, depending on how long you let it rest.
Because I've never had a cigar this small, but I guess being small and fat, it smokes real slow. Like I said, I expect it to be a quick one, but yeah, it's like everyone I've smoked so far has been at least an hour cigar. So don't let the size fool you. Yeah, size doesn't matter, as some people tell you.
Yeah, but I mean, as the couple that I've smoked and everything, I mean, you know, it isn't going to be my first pick of a cigar, but in the right environment and everything, I mean, it definitely has its place. And, you know, people that prefer those, you know, different hardwood, smoky flavors and everything else are really going to love this cigar.
Yeah, it's mainly a Mexican San Andreas wrapper with Brazilian Matafina, Nicaraguan, and USA fillers. Smoked right here in Kentucky.
Yeah, so, you know, not having too many of the Drew Estates, the M-Watt or my Uzi weighs a ton, you know, cigars, I haven't run across a bad one yet. I mean, I love the innovativeness, you know.
And the logo, too, is like, I mean, it's very American. You know, big eagle with an American flag. Just, yeah, get you all patriotic while you're smoking.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely got to freedom up for this cigar.
And as long as we're talking about freedom and up, actually, not any really related transition here. This is episode 50. Like I've said, welcome to the Cigar Nerds podcast at least 50 times on record by now. So, you know, we're coming up, we're about 2 months out from our 2-year anniversary of starting this thing. 50 episodes in, man. What are your thoughts? Have you learned anything in this 5-year, you know, 50 episode mission? Since this week's episode is going to be about the new Star Trek universe, like the last 3 movies that have come out since we just got Star Trek Beyond. So, what's your thoughts of 50 episodes into this thing?
Man, I think it's awesome. You know, from going to a concept of, you know what, you know, tossing around the ideas and the shit talk of doing a podcast to actually coming up, you know, with the equipment, everything, and, you know, actually being able to produce it. I mean, you know, I had a little bit of a audio production background, not too much. You had, you know, a little bit of website experience, not too much. So,
YouTube can teach you anything.
Yeah. I mean, for the fact of, you know, all right, well, we got the means to do it, but do we have the skill set? So it's been cool, you know, learning some of the different skills and some of the challenges. And, you know, then too, like just being out and about, like, you know, it's really cool. You know, we go down to Dragon Con and people are like, oh shit, it's the Cigar Nerds. Or we go to different events and, you know, people, you know, recognize. I mean, for two guys sitting in a basement to, you know, be getting, you know, listeners from all over the globe now, like, it's pretty freaking awesome. Like, you know, and this shit doesn't happen without listeners and downloads and everything else. So it's definitely been a you know, unique experience. You know, when we first started talking about it, I was like, all right, this will be another one of those, you know, ideas we'll revisit every 5 years and nothing come to fruition. But shit, we made it happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, like, improved my, you know, coming up with stuff on the fly and writing and coming up with ideas and stuff. I mean, it's made me a much more creative person, I think, having to think about, you know, this show. And like I said, I've been wanting to try other creative products, you know, maybe try some, you know, acting or comedy or something if, you know, I can find time for the opportunity comes up. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why we started this thing, because I was just bored with life, and I was like, man, I want to do something creative, but I can't, you know, paint. Yeah, it's like, or draw.
I can't really draw,
but
you
I
know.
Can talk shit for an hour, and have managed to do it at least, you know, 50 episodes in a row, because that was the whole thing. It's like, all right, cool, we're going to have ideas for like 4 or 5 episodes, and this thing's going to die away, but here we are going, you know, almost 2 years at this point. It's,
No, I mean, we've definitely established a little bit of a brand for ourselves. So, you know, I mean, we're, you know, not going to be, you know, some of the folks that are out there, you know, making millions on YouTube, whatever the case is. But that was never really my goal. Like,
that's for year 3.
But no,
year 3, we become millionaires.
All right. Sweet. I'll make sure that's in, you know, my agreement somewhere. Like,
yeah, I think it's one of the highlights over the last, you know, nearly 2 years, was that first time we went to Dragon Con as, you know, we weren't official, but we were there and kind of doing a few things. And I was wearing my Cigar Nerd t-shirt and just walking to a panel, and some girl stopped me. She's like, oh, are you, you know, one of the Cigar Nerds? I'm like, I mean, I think it was like the first time we'd met someone in the real world that had listened to the podcast. I mean, we'd met people at our local cigar shops or whatever, but yeah, that's just the guys that know us. They, you know, they knew us before we were doing podcasts, but you know, when you, or at other cigar events where you're like, all right, you expect someone to at least give something called Cigar Nerds a listen if you're at a cigar event, but just running into random person on the street that, you know, knows who we are. That was probably the highlight of Dragon Con for me last year.
Yeah, and I think that kind of speaks volumes to what we, you know, talked about originally doing with the podcast, you know? Yeah, cigars are a big part of our lives, but, you know, a cigar isn't necessarily what makes me nerdy, you know? And we didn't want this show to be just for nerds or, you know, just for cigar lovers. We wanted to kind of, you know, bring it all together and, you know, the nerdy topics and the conversations that are had over a good cigar or with a group of good friends or, you know, sometimes even complete strangers, you know, just how, you know, nerd culture can bring folks together. So can cigar culture. So, you know, why not combine the best of both worlds?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to be a cigar smoker to listen to the podcast because we are the cigar nerds. But we're open to all nerds. You know, if you want to tune in and listen to cigars, you know, you can do that. If you want to turn in and listen to idiots talk about Star Trek for an hour, you can do that too. And hopefully we'll do another 50 of these at least. And with that, we'll be right back with our main topic.
Stay tuned.
There will always be those who mean to do us harm. To stop them, we risk awakening the same evil within ourselves. Our first instinct is to seek revenge when those we love are taken from us. But that's not who we are. We are here today to rechristen the USS Enterprise. And to honor those who lost their lives nearly 1 year ago. When Christopher Pike first gave me his ship, he had me recite the captain's oath. Words I didn't appreciate at the time. Now I see them as a call for us to remember who we once were and who we must be again. And those words, space. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Her 5-year mission? To explore strange new worlds. To seek out new life and new civilizations. To boldly go where no one has gone before.
Captain on the bridge.
These are the continuing voyages of the Starship Cigar Nerd. Our mission to seek out new cigars and new nerdy topics. to boldly go where probably a lot of people have already gone before. But we're here to talk about Star Trek.
Yes. Yeah.
And not the OG Star Trek. We're talking about the, I'll call them reboots, but the new alternate universe of modern Star Trek films, of which we now have a trilogy.
Yeah, and I hope we don't catch too much hate from the hardcore Trekkies out there, because I had a really difficult time trying to get into OG Star Trek. Like, you know, I needed more action or more something, and it just wasn't cutting it for me. But, you know, after going back and rewatching, you know, kind of, like you said, the, you know, the, I guess, alternate, you know.
Let's talk about that to begin with. That's one of the cool things, because I hate freaking reboots. It pisses me off every time something gets rebooted. You know, there's some exceptions that turn out to be good movies, but especially when you reboot a franchise, people can kind of get offended with that. And the way they did it they rebooted without rebooting. They made the reboot part of the original continuity by including Leonard Nimoy and a whole time travel aspect to the first movie. So, you know, basically some stuff got changed. So now this is an alternate timeline, you know. So it's, you know, not a traditional reboot. It, you know, the things and people from the other universe still existed or will exist
in the future,
we're now in the past.
Kind of reimagined. But, you know, it was, you know, it added a sense of, you know, action, and there was still character development. And I mean, I got enough nerdy friends, you know, listening to their conversations about Star Trek and everything, that I always had a pretty good premise on, you know, what was going on, who the characters were, and just the general idea. But, you know, the films for me, you know, are really what got me into Star Trek. And I was like, you know, hey, you know, I've kind of always been a little bit of a downer, much more of a Star Wars, you know, geek, more so than Star Trek. But, you know, with these latest films, I'm like, you know, there's a lot of similarities and a lot of things that, you know, overall I like about each of the different franchises.
Yeah, I mean, and with these, like I said, doing that, connecting it to the original series was kind of, because it kind of gave you a basis. You know, you were going in like, they didn't completely change everybody. I mean, everyone's personalities are kind of like the characters were originally designed. They just kind of a little tweaked, you know, because like I said, this being alternate timeline where, like, you know, there was Kirk's father gets killed, and you know, they said it's not his progression that got him to where he was in the original series or original movies, but it was close enough in spirit that it, you know, it didn't set off my reboot offense.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing is, you know, I mean, I think it added a certain life to the franchise that I think, you know, had it had stuck, you know, with like OG Star Wars and just left it alone. Star Trek. Jesus, hopefully that doesn't continue to happen, but we'll see. Brain function. But anyway, like I think that, you know, the new Star Trek movies will breed a sense of life. I mean, get, you know, younger, you know, people that are, you know, more into action and things of that nature. Golly, I don't know what the fuck is happening here.
Someone set your tongue to stun.
Yeah, I guess so. Like, I've been phased.
Yeah, this one, I said, for the first of the new Star Trek films came out in 2009, directed by J.J. Abrams, and written by Robert Orsay and Alex Kurtzman. Yeah, this first film, it was, like I said, I think it gained a lot of credit for at least for me, for, because the original Star Trek movies, there's kind of an old saying, only watch the even numbered ones, because like the first one was boring as shit. I mean, there's no action. It's like just straight up exploration, which that's what Trek was. They were on a mission to explore, but it would mix up. There's like, you know, science episodes, there's freaking action episodes, but like I said, the movie, like it's like the even number movies were always kind of boring, and then this, like, they'd be like, oh, that one was boring, let's do like an action oriented one, because like Wrath of Khan is considered one like the best Star Trek movies. It's like, so the even ones were always the ones you had to watch until these come out. I mean, there's not really, well, no, the second one was kind of critically, people didn't like it. I liked it, but like a lot of the hardcore Trekkies didn't like the second one. But this first one, I said, brought JJ to the sci-fi world. Like I said, we probably wouldn't have got him directing episode one if it wasn't for this movie. I mean, episode seven.
Yeah, like we're both going to end up like
you're rubbing off on me, man. You know,
I tend to have that influence on people. You know, I mean, that's what a good co-host does. We feed off each other's ideas. Unfortunately, all of mine are the wrong idea.
But like I said, this one really, the point I was really trying to make was that it benefited from nostalgia to me, because like when I first. Yeah, I kind of went into it with like, nah, it's a freaking reboot, biased. And then when the first time I start hearing the sound effects from the original TV series, like when you first see the Enterprise, you hear that, all that little beeping and noises you heard in the background of like the original shows and stuff. And then, like, you know, them whipping out the communicators and that, you know, chirp thing. I was like, it was new, but it looked vaguely like what I had known before.
It brought a sense of familiarity.
And the sounds of it and everything. It was just like these little bits of things that, like, you know, that helped you bring you back into the universe. Even though it was something different, it was still familiar enough that it didn't, you know, jar you.
Yeah, no, I think that's a, you know, very valid point. As you know, for, you know, me, even though I really couldn't, you know, get into the OG stuff as much. But, you know, there were the things, there were likenesses that I picked up on, you know, the characters and the way that they interacted and stuff like that. You know, but there were also, you know, most of the time with reboots, I'm like you. You know, it's going to suck. I automatically have a negative kind of premise behind it. But with this, you know, like, once the first time you see the phasers, and, you know, I can remember, you know, the OG Star Trek was, you know, just a solid laser beam. Yeah. Like, it just did not visually...
That was the thing. These movies here are, and that's probably one of the complaints of, like, original, like, Star Trek fans, they're a lot more action-oriented. These are an action film based in space, pretty much. And while things look close enough to the original, that's one of the things I noticed they did change was the way the ship moved. Like, in the original series, the ships move real slow. It's almost like an actual naval battle. The phasers are like a solid laser beam, but now they're like short bursts, and the ships move almost like, you know, jet fighters in space. It's made much more of a Star Wars feel to it with the way they had the laser. They definitely upped the action quotient in this, you know, run of series.
And I think that's what I liked. I mean, you know, the characters were already established. You knew what to kind of expect. But, you know, the combination of the, you know, the character conflicts and them trying to settle their scores, and, you know, you're like, oh, shit, you know, is everybody just going to implode as a team because nobody can work together? Or there's so many rivalries going on that, you know, it's like, you know, there was a character conflict. And then also, too, like you said, you know, with the updated... You know, way the stuff moved, you know, it seemed, you know, I'm thinking like, you know, you're in space, you know, jet propulsion technology, rocket propulsion, everything else should be much more advanced. Like, for everything to move like a naval fleet and just real slow doesn't quite fit what I think of when I think of space. Like, okay, if you're a docking station or, you know, something, then yeah, you're probably not moving all that fast. But thing, if like, you're a ship with warp speed and everything, like, you should be able to, you know,
yeah, that was maneuver. One of the things is, like, the very... Because in the old stuff, there really wasn't a sense of size and speed. And this, they did, you know, visually a lot better job of, you know, conveying that this is a big ship and it goes really, really fast.
So fast, it's going to look like it's sitting still.
And that's one of the things I loved about, like, especially the set design of it when they're in engineering. It looks like what you would imagine the guts of a super advanced naval vessel would be. I mean, it's. I think they actually shot in some kind of industrial locations or inside, like, you know, actual industrial environments to give it that, you know, realistic functioning. You know, the ship looked like it functioned. It wasn't like some fancy thing that you're like, oh, it's all computers. We don't know what the hell's going on. But, I mean, there was, like, pipes and conduits and everything. It looked functional. Like, everything in the movie looked, you know, real world. Like,
yeah, weren't they on some kind of like a power plant or something like that?
I think
that?
So, or at least like... I think the second one maybe. They filmed some of that stuff in there. But yeah, like everything really looked functional. And, you know, I think the reason why things moved so slowly in the original stuff was, you know, we were limited by the technology. I mean, they were using models and stuff, so they couldn't really do a whole lot. And everything that came before that, I mean, came after that, they kind of stuck to that model that was already established and just kind of upgraded it a little, but they still kind of moved and functioned the same. But since this is a rebooted universe, alternate timeline, they've kind of like, all right, you know, technology, you know, got tweaked a little.
So you had the introduction of CGI and, you know, some of the, you know, better processing. And then, too, you know, I mean...
But I think if they had tried doing this within the original continuity, it would have been too jarring. Like, as you know, if the Next Generation Enterprise is all of a sudden acting like a starfighter and shooting stuff, but with this being a rebooted universe, you don't...
I think it also has to do, too...
It doesn't limit you to that the established style.
I think a lot of it, too, you know, just has to do with different eras. I mean, you know, we wind, you know, back to original Star Trek. You know, the, you know... Basically, you know, us as humans, you know, life moved a lot slower. You know, there was a lot more methodical thinking and everything. Fast forward, you know, to today's time and everything's fast paced. So it's, you know, lightning quick decisions. Everything's expected immediately and everything to that effect. You don't always try to think the solution all the way through. You just think about, all right, this is the challenge I'm facing now. Once I complete it, I move on to the next challenge. So... You know, I mean, I think just our cultures, you know, and where we are, you know, the progression of the world, you know, has a lot to do with how fast things moved as well.
And in this version, our new Enterprise crew, we have Chris Pine as Captain James T. Kirk, Zachary Quinto as Mr. Spock, Simon Pegg is Scotty, Carl Urban as Bones, Zoe Saldana as Uhura, and Anton Yelchin as Chekhov, and of course John Cho as Sulu. And I gotta say, like, their portrayal of the characters, very true to, like, they didn't really change the characters that much. I mean, they, like I said, we're looking at a younger, like, the original stuff, we didn't meet them until they were already an established crew, already on their 5-year mission. And this is like, these are the guys coming straight out of the academy and getting thrust into a war. So, like, they're maybe not as...
I mean, they're definitely not as seasoned.
Yeah, they're definitely not a cohesive crew yet. But it was kind of cool seeing those, you know, initial meetings. Oh, this is how Kirk met Spock. This is how Kirk met Bones. And I got to say, Carl Urban portrayal of Dr. McCoy, spot on. I mean,
oh, yes.
He is my favorite thing of, like, these three. He has that grumpy, that I don't want to be here attitude that McCoy was, and the whole, like, damn it, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a bomb technician. Or I mean, yes. Just his, like, grumpiness. You know, everyone else is, like, so excited, like, we're about to explore and go where no man has gone before, and Bones is like, fuck, there's aliens and disease and all that kind of stuff out there. I mean, his grumpiness just, like, cracks me up so bad.
All the shit we're gonna have to put up with between now and then, like, you don't even know the half of it.
You know, I wouldn't be here if my ex-wife didn't take everything in the divorce. I mean, but like I said, they did a good job of keeping the personalities, I think, close to the original, but then giving them a little bit, you know, new life. So they're not doing... Pine's not doing an impression of William Shatner, you know, it's still that same character. There was no character that I didn't recognize. Like, you know, I have seen these people before, and you know, I thought that was cool.
Yeah, no, that's definitely how I felt. You know, it was updated. It was a little bit different, but at the same time, it wasn't so different that you were like, all right, what the heck is going on? Or, you know, the same characters that you were connected to, like, you could reconnect to, you know, these characters. I mean, and that's one of the things that, too, I think really helped, you know, the OG Star Trek. I think they focused so heavily on, you know, the character development aspect of things. Whereas, you know, here, there was a little bit of that. And, you know, the precursor and the challenges of, you know, everybody being younger and going through the academy. I mean, it was all stuff that I felt like I could relate to.
Yeah, and... Simon Pegg as Scotty. Perfect casting of Scotty. I mean, it, because Scotty was always like the badass. I mean, he's the dude that keeps the ship working, and like in this, at least especially in this first movie, he kind of became the comedy relief nearly. Where this, you know, in this movie, we're getting attacked by a ship from the future, led by Neeru, played by, I think, Eric Bana, who is a Romulan from the future who was out to kill original Spock, because Spock, like, their planet blew up and Spock was on his way to save it and didn't get there in time, so they kind of blame Spock. And he's at this new technology that ends up opening up a wormhole, and they both get sucked into the past. So this guy shows up, you know, early, when, you know, little Captain Kirk is a baby and kills his dad and stuff, and is basically attacking the universe trying to find Spock. And like I said, but I don't know where I was going with it, but yeah, that's pretty much where this movie was going. But yeah, when you first see Leonard Nimoy, when like Kirk runs into, cause basically Kirk and Spock from this universe don't get along, and you know, he ends up throwing him off the Enterprise and dropping him on this like ice planet, and he meets Spock, who's hiding there, and it's just hilarious. This, you know, the Spock we know meeting his friend James T. Kirk again, you know, and this, you know, kid doesn't know who the hell this dude is, and he's like, just like, yeah, I haven't always been your friend.
Like,
he's
what, like, the heck? Yeah,
who the hell are you? Yeah, and he finally realizes the whole, you know, time travel shenanigans. And then they go to this abandoned outpost to try to get off the planet, and they find Mr. Scott and his little alien friend.
Yes. Dude, I don't know, man. I always like the little alien friend for some reason. Like, to me, those characters, like, cool. And I like, too, you know, it's mischievous. It'll be sitting up, you know, on some fucking equipment. And, like, get your ass down from there. Like, you know.
Yeah, like, by the end of the movie, when you know Scotty's officially chief engineer and stuff, he's like, you're ready to go. Oh yeah, everything's running great, Captain. He's like, get down from there. And the alien's like sitting up on top of one of the engines. He shakes his head like, no. Just their like interaction. You can tell they've been like stranded on this planet for like far too long, and there's this the whole buddy buddy interaction. He's like, I would do anything for some like decent food. Like, you're tiny. You eat like a bean. And they're like, well, how'd you get like stuck out here? He's like, well, I invented this new beaming technology, and to demonstrate it, I used the Admiral's dog. What happened to the dog? We don't know. It hasn't been found yet. But the theory still works, Devin.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Just their interaction was just always awesome. I mean, it just kind of that whole comic relief element, too. I mean, that's one of the things is... all the actors and actresses portrayed their characters, you know, pretty much spot on. And there was such a dynamic there that, you know, it kept everything interesting and fresh. And, you know, the whole time travel aspect, too, was, you know, something I had not considered before and, you know, thought was really interesting as well.
Just having, you know, the original Spock there to kind of, you know, guide them a little bit. And especially he's like, all right, we need to get you back on the Enterprise because only James Kirk and the Enterprise can, you know, save the universe. And he's like, well, you know, me and Spock don't really get along. He's like, well, use this regulation that if he's emotionally compromised that he has to give up command. And he's like, but, you know, he's like, dude, I just lost my planet. Like, I'm not in my right mind. You just got to, like, piss me off enough to make me realize that I'm not. And then that whole, like, well, we need to use this advanced technology. He's like, well, I haven't done it. He's like, well, and this boss, well, Tetley, it's not screwing up the timeline because you're the one that does invent this. So, yeah, here's your here's your thing you're going to invent in a couple of years. Go ahead and put it together.
And, you know, I thought that was kind of cool, you know, when he's, you know, actually there and, you know, says, all right, change the formula to this. And Spock's like, wait a second, this looks vaguely familiar. It's like, well, I mean, it is your formula just, you know, tweaked to actually, you know, be finalized and function?
You would have figured it out eventually. Yeah. You know, in fact, you did figure it out eventually. I'm just speeding up the process.
But I kind of like the fact, too, you know, how he's not able to, you know, tell, you know, Spock that, hey, I found you in the future and anything.
Yeah,
and
he's like, he's not going to believe me. He's like, oh, you can't tell him. Yes. Which is that... Which I thought was funny when new Spock finally met old Spock, and he's like, because first he thinks it's his father, and it turns around and he's like, nope, I'm not our father. And he's like, why didn't, you know, because he figured it out once they find the spaceship, and the spaceship like knows that he's like, hey, welcome, you know, yeah. Ambassador Spock. And he's like, what? And he's like, yeah, I think you'll know how to drive the ship. Like, you do about this? I can't tell you. And he's like, why didn't you? You know, he's like, well, like, I thought it was important to let him, like, you know, figure stuff out on his own. So I kind of made him think that, us meeting would kind of cause a paradox that would end the universe. He's like, you lied. He's like, no, yeah, we never lie. We exaggerate.
But, I mean, I do like the fact, you know, when he takes control of the ship and he's like, well, I guess I'm going to learn to fly you. Or, you know what, maybe at some other, you know, maybe I've already flown you. Like, yeah. I don't know anymore.
Yeah. I said probably the only downsides to this movie, if we got to say something bad about it, is the freaking lens flares, man. Like, JJ, I like some of his stuff he does, but the dude like went batshit crazy. Like, he's always like if you watch Cloverfield. I mean, the dude has always been a lens flare guy, but this one, he went, there's too many lights on that bridge, man. He went overboard with the freaking lens flare.
I mean,
that scared me when he started doing Star Wars. I'm like, dude, they go to Tatooine, that many suns, nothing but lens flare. But, you know, he finally backed off.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing that was, and it was bad because the first couple of times I watched the film, I really didn't pay, you know, that much attention, you know, or whatever. And then you're like, Yeah, the lens flare. And then as soon as you said lens flare, I'm like, mother... It's over with, because now I'm like, oh, lens flare, every other shot.
Exactly.
Oh, camera panned, more lens flare.
That, and also you're so used to seeing the interaction of Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, of them being like, you know, best friends, that you didn't have that in this movie because they just met each other. I mean, you kind of saw them slowly learning to respect and appreciate each other, but in this movie, you didn't have that three-person dynamic that you're used to having. It was more antagonistical in this film. I mean, they've since then gone back to that.
But I mean, I think it's, you know, once again, it's speaking to that younger age. You're, you know, right out of the academy, so what are you doing? Everybody's competing, trying to find their place to be top dog and everything. And, you know, so, you know, for somebody that, you know, isn't a hardcore Trek fan or whatever, I could appreciate that. Now, you know, I did, you know, once we get to some of the later films and the interactions all change, everybody has their set place, you know, that dynamic does change a little bit. But I kind of like the younger, you know, I'm rebellious, or, you know what, I'm strictly by the book, or...
And that's one of the things, too, that I did like about this movie is, you know, they refer to it in the other movies of how, like, Kirk was the only one to ever pass the Kobayashi Maru test. And in this one, you actually get to see him cheating at the Kobayashi Maru test.
But I can't say that, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's a saying, if you don't cheat, you're not trying hard enough.
Like, well, that's the thing. I was like, I don't believe in a no-win situation, so I think this is a bullshit test. And so I'm going to show you it's a bullshit test. But yeah, it was funny finally seeing that actually happen and that it's, you know, been referred to in the other movies. And then that brings us on to their sequel, Into Darkness, from 2013.
And I gotta say, man, that, you know, going from, you know, Star Trek to Star Trek Into Darkness, like, the progression, like, I mean, it only sucked me in that much more. Like, you know, most of the time it's, you know, your sequels are just kind of, you know, trying to play off the first film's success or whatever. But, like, as they progress, like, to me, I get more and more sucked in and become more of a Star Trek fan than, you know, so it's really cool to see that.
Yeah, and this one was definitely more of an action film than even the... And the last one had a lot of action, but this one was like, you know, you get a terrorist attacked right off the go. And, you know, this one introduced Cumberbatch... Benedict Cumberbatch as, you know, Mr. Or the Sherlock as Khan.
Yes.
And like I said, this one was like probably had the most references to the original stuff. Because, I mean, even though this is like the first meeting of him and Khan, it's a lot like, you know, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. I mean, they flip everything, you know. And this one, instead of Spock dying in the battle, it was Kirk. You know, instead of getting that, you know, react, you know, because then, like, in Wrath of Khan, you get that reaction from Shatner of, like, you know, but this time it's Spock going, Khan!
Yes.
And this is, like, the first time you really see Spock pissed off. I mean, and that would probably be the thing that would push him, because, you know, Spock is always, like, you know, Vulcans are very, you know, logical, not emotional. And for to give him that big final action sequence of the big, like, bad guy fight, it would probably take something like the death of his best friend or only friend at that point, since his planet's been wiped out.
Yeah.
That's like the thing that would definitely push him over the edge and let him get emotional and just beat a mofo.
But he's truly, you know, he's half, you know, still half human, half Vulcan, right? So yeah. You know, I mean...
His mom was Winona Ryder.
Because I think that's one of the things about Spock's character is, you know, he tries so hard in that first film to be, you know, purely that Vulcan way, you know?
Yeah.
I'm going to... But, you know, he never can quite, you know, release that, you know, that little bit of human side. I mean, you see that, you know, the relationship conflict that he has in the first film, and then, you know, letting his emotions get the better of him. So, you know, I think it's a very, you know, awesome dynamic for Spock.
Yeah, because that's the thing with, like, Leonard Nimoy's portrayal of Spock. As it went on, he got more and more human because he became more comfortable with that balance. And this is a Spock that's still learning that balance. You know, he's raised to be this way, but he still has that human side that he's, like, slowly learning to balance.
You know, it's appreciate, and, you know, like, I don't know. I mean, I don't necessarily see it as a setback, I don't guess, you know? I mean, I see that as, look, you get an opportunity to be the best of both worlds, you know? You could just be cold-hearted and immune to the emotion, but you know how emotion weighs into things, so, you know, like...
And the interaction between him and Uhura in this movie, of them having, like, a domestic dispute, it, like, they're, like, on a mission, and they're having, like, a fight, and Kirk's like, guys, could y'all... he's, like, the straight third wheel in this scenario, and he's like, oh, crap. But, yeah, Cumberbatch as Khan was pretty badass, too. I mean, it... like I said, he's such a superior bastard, and that's what the character requires. You know, he does superior so good. I mean, he's used to playing that as Sherlock, but yeah, giving him Khan and making him an actual superior being is a pretty fitting role for him.
Yeah, and I don't know, man. Like, just the, you know, once again, I think this, you know, really put in perspective the scope of the battles, the size, you know, of the enemies, and, you know, the formidable forces and everything. I mean, it truly felt, you know, larger than life, you know.
Yeah, because basically the story of this one is there is a rogue element within the government who is trying to provoke a war with the Klingons. And they found all these frozen, genetically modified superior people, and they unthawed Khan to get him to give us advanced weaponry and stuff, but they're holding his people hostage. So he's basically, I mean, he tries to assassinate the entire, you know, government because they thinks, you know, they've got his people. It ends up killing, you know, Kirk's father figure, Admiral Pike, played by, Bruce Greenwood, who, phenomenal actor. I mean, he's been in a lot of stuff. And, like, but then, you know, once Kirk finds out what's going on, he kind of starts to, like, to trust him because he's like, all right, this guy's, you know, just trying to protect his family. But no, you know, as it turns out, he's still a maniacal douchebag and wants to destroy the world. So <Yes. laughs> he will help us as long as it's convenient to him, but he's eventually going to try to wipe us out.
Anything and also, for the cause.
This one introduced a couple new characters of Admiral Marcus, who is... played by Peter Weller. Freaking RoboCop is the...
Yeah, I thought that was kind of cool.
And his daughter played by... was it Alice Eve or something? And she's playing Dr. Marcus, which if you remember from Wrath of Khan, she was apparently had hooked up with Kirk at some point and took off, and Kirk had a son that he didn't know about. So introducing that character was kind of cool that, like, oh, this, you know, could be the... The Wrath of Khan still could happen, like, you know, farther in the future, like it did in the original series.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just... I don't know, man. Like, I can't... You know, this second film here, I mean, it just... It set the stage for so much. And, you know, once again, I just love the action. I love the portrayals of the characters. And, dude, it was just freaking badass. Like, you know, it... And... It minimized the lens flare. So, like, you know, the fact without, you know...
Having an all-black ship limits yes. lens flare. Yeah, the Vengeance was a badass ship. and it was, like, the size of that thing, too. It was, like, it kind of reminds me of, like, the original... It looked a lot like a blacked-out version of the Enterprise from Next Generation.
Yes.
But it'd be, like, with badass guns and stuff. And that was the other thing, too. Like, in this movie... Kirk he's the one that's emotionally compromised. I mean, he just, his father figure just got killed. They try to take his ship away from him. He's freaking angry. So he's not thinking logically.
Yeah, I mean, he's ready to go,
he's like, all right, I'm going to take they send him on a mission to assassinate this guy in enemy territory. And, you know, he he even like fires Scotty because they're like, oh, we want you to use these top secret weapons. And Scotty's like, you're not getting that on my ship until I inspect it to make sure it's safe. And they're like, oh no, it's top secret. And Kirk's like, no, we gotta do this mission. You're fired or whatever. But eventually like calms down and realizes like, oh, I fucked up. And let me send Scotty and his short buddy on this mission to find out what the hell's really going on. Yeah. And he discovers the big alien ship, but like him and the little alien getting drunk in a bar. And
when that was freaking awesome.
And when Kirk calls, he's like, oh, it's Captain Perfect Hair. like,
but they sober up really quick.
Yeah. Like, he's Scottish. He's used to being drunk and then getting shit done.
I guess so. What about the little alien fucker, though? I mean, the dude's like 12. He can't be hanging out in a bar.
And this movie, too, was... That's one thing. John Cho, he's always been known for comedic roles. I mean, he was like the MILF guy in American Pie. I mean, that's where he started. And now he's playing, Mr. Sulu. And he gets that point of, actually getting to sit in the captain's chair while Kirk is away on this mission to try to take this dude out. And McCoy is like, you're leaving him to like play poker with no cards and you want him to bluff. You know, he's like, he'll be fine. And then he like, calls up Khan. He's like, we know exactly where you are, and I've got 72 long-range torpedoes pointed at you. I've got a man on the way to arrest you. You've got 3 minutes to surrender, or I'm launching every missile at you. Do not test me. Just like completely like straight face. And McCoy's like, remind me not to piss you off, Mr. Sulu. Yes. And it was funny because like in the later movies and stuff, he was like the one character that actually left the Enterprise and became a captain on his own. So it was kind of cool seeing that, oh, this is the first time he got the taste of leadership. He's not just flying the ship anymore. He's like a full-fledged officer that could command men. And that was cool seeing him step up and making that character very believable.
Yes.
From a comedic actor doing something that serious where, he doesn't really get a whole lot of comedy elements in these movies. It's cool to see him progress as an actor.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I say that about a lot of the, characters and actors and actresses that we saw, in the franchises. I mean, that was one of the things that I really enjoyed is, there was never a fallback or, a setback. Like, everything always moved forward. It progressed. It made sense. And you don't get that a lot of times. Like, most of the time it's, well, we're going to change this and change that, and it doesn't even feel like the same film or anything anymore. And, this kept that same, feeling, the times when it was supposed to be serious, it was serious. The, comic relief elements were there and spot on and, didn't make it seem overly, serious. Like,
and Scotty trying to talk down when he gets caught by the security guy when he's trying to get Kirk and Khan onto the ship. Just, so are you private security or Starfleet? He's like, what's the number? And just tried like con this guy the whole time. I mean, it's Simon Pegg does a good job of being Scotty. I can't think of another actor that, that could replace James Doohan in that role.
No, I mean, like you said, I think that was a perfect casting for that role. So,
and then that brings us to the newest episode. So from here on in, spoiler alerts, we're fixing to talk about Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah, and I gotta say, man, this was a movie to see in theaters. Like,
And this one was only produced by J.J. J.J. did not direct, because of course he did Star Trek because he couldn't do Star Wars. I mean, he even said that like he wasn't like big into Star Trek to begin with. He was always a Star Wars guy, but this was kind of his resume to get him into Star Wars. Because when the first movie came out, there was no chance of we ever getting another Star Wars movie. But like I said, but once that happened, he's like, this movie was his resume. Hey guys, I can direct space action.
Yeah, and I mean, there was so much of this movie that felt like Star Wars in so many instances that.
I mean, there's even like a hidden R2-D2 in the first movie. I mean, there's definitely, you can draw parallels. But yeah, the third movie is directed by Justin Lin, which you may know from a little movie called Fast and the Furious, or like the last couple of them.
And it definitely, I mean, this movie definitely had, Justin Lin influence too. I mean, there was a lot more.
I can't wait for Vin Diesel to show up as an alien. It's a random cameo.
I wouldn't be surprised if, like, you know, somewhere, like, behind the scenes, there's a Vin Diesel, like, montage or something, like, back there, like, waiting, like.
Well, JJ hit a bunch of his friends and stuff as stormtroopers in the last.
Exactly.
So we're going to find, like, when the DVD comes out, we get the behind the scenes, we're going to find out which alien, unrecognizable alien was actually Vin Diesel.
But, I mean, you know, not only did we get, you know, this movie introduced a lot of dogfighting, which, being a space film, I really enjoyed.
Yeah, that freaking swarm was nasty.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's one of the reasons it felt very Star Wars-like. But then, too, you know, there was quite a bit more, you know, hand-to-hand combat, too, in some of the battles. So, you know, that, to me, you know, was like, all right, that's a little bit of a different change of pace. Like, we're not exclusively relying on our phasers, you know, this time around. And
this is also the first movie not written by, not only is it not directed by J.J., it wasn't written by the original writers. This one was actually written by Simon Pegg. So, which kind of understands why this is almost like his movie. I mean, he has some badass parts in this movie.
Yes.
And this, I got to say, this one here was probably the most Star Trek of the three movies. I mean, this one really felt like, because, you know, in the first two movies, they hadn't been on their 5-year mission, which is what the TV show was based off of. And this one takes place like year three of their 5-year mission. So they've been out doing this shit for a while. And it really had that relationship of Spock, Kirk, and McCoy.
Oh yeah,
the other two movies did not really have
this time around. I mean, this is what,
especially the Spock and McCoy back and forth. I mean, because that's all the way it was always in the show, was those two kind of bickering back and forth, where they respect each other, they secretly are friends, but they still got to give each other shit.
I mean, that's usually a sign of good friends, though. Like, you know, truly good friends, like you and I, we can give each other shit, and we're not going to get pissed off or upset about it. We're going to be like, damn, that was fucked up. Well, I'm going to one-up you, so here we go.
And I got to say, this movie here was the most Spock-like portrayal of Quinto. I mean, he's definitely coming in that role of playing Spock.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is. I don't know. I really liked, I don't know. I mean, this film just tied everything together, and it just, you know, once again, seeing it on the big screen and everything else was just, I mean, it's one of the few movies I say that you should experience in theaters.
Yeah,
like, just, I mean, looking at the swarm and everything to that
just
effect.
The size, I mean, just, and scope of it is something that really needs to be seen on a big screen. You know, and this, like I said, this movie, they are on their mission, and they stop at this new star base we have, which is the Yorktown star base, which looked so amazing, like the scale of it. Like when you see the Enterprise flying down like the docking tube into the center of the station and stuff, just, that's the first time you've really seen the Enterprise at scale with like people on the ground and stuff, seeing how big this thing is and how small it is compared to the station. I think that was the coolest like visuals of it. And then, like I said, they're getting ready to explore an uncharted nebula when a escape pod comes out, and they're like, oh, we're going to go on a rescue mission and rescue this crew that's crashed. Well, it turns out it's a setup, and there's this evil alien in the middle of this thing called Crawl, who has a swarm of these freaking ships that just destroy the Enterprise. And that was one of the things.
Dude,
that
these things are like freaking chainsaws. Yeah. Like, that's what,
I mean, they're just crashing straight through the ship. They're not even bothering to shoot at anything. And like, and they move as one. They're like all interconnected. So even when we fire at them, they just move out of the way, and it's like impossible to beat them.
It's a freaking hive, man.
That was one of the things they showed in the trailers that I was like, all right, they blew up the Enterprise. Like, how can you have a Star Trek movie without the Enterprise? But once we got into the story, it all fit. I mean, it did not, you know, it still felt like a Star Trek movie, even though it was mainly a kind of like a, you know, most of the movies on the ground and not in space, but but it was almost like Die Hard, like the lone guys that escaped, Kirk, McCoy, Spock, and Scotty have to rescue their crew from certain death.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know, man. I think that was one of the things that kept it, you know, fresh and, you know, invigorating was, you know, just, there was so many things that, you know, I was reading people's, you know, reviews and thoughts on the trailer and stuff like that prior to seeing the movie, and people's like, oh, this isn't going to feel like Star Trek at all, and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, but then you see the movie, and like you said, how well it's tied in, and it's like, this is exactly what I would want out of this movie.
Like, yeah, just those whole moments of Spock and McCoy stuck together. I mean, that was some straight, that was like probably the most Star Trek thing I've seen. And Scotty, when he first meets the alien girl on this planet that helps us out, Sophia Botelli, the character name is Jayla, and she's basically the only person to...
You mean Star Trek's female version of Finn?
I mean, dude, I didn't even think about that. She does have a staff she beats the shit out of people with. It's...
And I mean, the other throwback that I had...
And she has a classic motorcycle and plays Public Enemy. I mean, that was badass.
Then the fact, too, that, you know, once they find the crashed ship and everything, that she's made her base, you know, I was like, oh, shit. It's almost like when they discovered the Falcon.
Yeah, because when she first meets Scotty and saves him, it's funny, she's like... She's like, she speaks English, and she's like, "What? Who are you?" He's like, "I'm Montgomery Scott." Yeah, Scotty. He's like, "All right, Montgomery Scotty." And she does that like through the whole, like even when she meets Kirk, she's like, "I'm James T. Kirk," and so she calls him James T. through the whole freaking movie. But he's like, "Well, how'd you learn English?" She's like, "Oh, my house taught me." He's like, "Your house?" And she takes her back, and it's like this, and she's like, "Where'd you get that?" She sees his Starfleet logo. She's like, "Where'd you get that?" They're like, "Oh, it's the symbol of my, you know, I'm from Starfleet. It's the Starfleet logo." And he's like, "Where'd you get this ship?" And she's like, "Actually, it's yours." Then he like dusts off like the nameplate, and it's like the NX whatever Franklin, which is like a lost ship, like one of the first, you know, ships to actually explore space that no one knows what disappeared like 150 years ago. No one knows what happened, and apparently ended up crashed on this planet. And since they don't have an Enterprise, Scotty works his magic and starts putting this thing back together, which I thought it was cool because, like I said, you don't really see the ship through most of it because it's like you're all seeing is like interior shots. And as like the bad guys leave to go, because their whole thing is they want to wipe out the Federation, and they leave to go destroy the Federation. So they're like, all right, we got to take the ship and stop them. But when you get the reveal of like the exterior of the ship, if anybody's watched the series Enterprise, it's the same model of ship as the original Enterprise from the Enterprise TV show. It's an NX class starship. So it's like it was cool that they brought that back into.
Yes.
So it looks like they're flying a rusty version of the old Enterprise.
But I thought it was cool, you know, just like, you know, taking some of the older technology and, you know, making it work for themselves. And
yeah, and apparently she's somebody on that ship was a fan of classic music, so she finds an old iPod or something, and so she's jamming out to when Scotty first finds her and stuff, and she takes him back to the ship, she's jamming out to like Public Enemy and stuff.
And it's like, oh, this must be classical music.
That's one of the best jokes, because later on when they go to fight the Swarm, they're like, all right, we're in this ship that's like, you know, way outdated. Like, how do we take these things down? And they're like, well, there's, in theory, they have to be linked somehow. They have to be kind of like a hive mind controlling the ships for them to move in unison like that. So if we can disrupt that, they'll all fall apart. And they're like, well, we need like a high frequency. So they beam Spock and McCoy over to take over one of the ships. And they're like, yeah, it's true. They're all connected. He's like, if we had like a high frequency signal, something like loud and distracting that would disrupt their communication thing, they'll just basically crash into each other and all blow up. And they're like, and Scotty's like, I think I know something loud and distracting. Yes. So they start playing freaking Beastie Boys, Sam. Like, that song just kicks off as they go into battle and ships are blowing up and all over the place. And that jet, like, Scott or McCoy and Spock are in that
and
ship.
I mean,
he's like, are they playing classical music? He's like, I believe they are.
But, I mean, it was awesome. Like, I almost think there's a thing, like, you know, whoever's up in the theater box, like, all right, you know, at this time marker, make sure to turn the volume way up.
Oh, yeah, like they crank the volume in the theater. And it's funny, he's like, you know, when they, like, all right, they start singing, it's that low intro to, like, Sabotage, and Kirk's like, good choice. And then, like, when they're, in, like, flying through, blowing, like, you freaking see, whatever, Chekhov, like, tapping his foot, they're, like, jamming out as they're, like, and then the base itself starts broadcasting this the signal too, and like all the ones that are attacking the base start blowing up. And I mean, it was just like the most badass. It was like one of those you want to get up out of your seat and be like,
yeah. I mean, I'm not even a Beastie Boys fan, and I was like, that's fucking awesome. Like, I mean, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, really helped make this movie, and we're seeing as a recurring theme that, you know, movies are relying so heavily on their soundtracks now.
Yeah, like, I mean, even. like from what I hear about, you know, like the Suicide Squad soundtrack. But it's also awesome to see modern, or well, music from our time being played in the future. That future setting makes that music to sound kind of like remember the old movie Knight's Tale with Heath Ledger?
Yeah.
Where they put like modern rock and roll in a medieval setting. Like seeing this music transpose over like a different time frame, just it oddly goes together and makes makes it more interesting.
Yeah. No, that was definitely awesome. I mean, I think that was probably one of the biggest highlights of the film. I mean, I gotta say, man, like this, there wasn't a whole lot of people in the theater with us, but I'll say, man, that everybody, you know, the parts that were funny, everybody was laughing. I mean, there was a good audience engagement and everything from this film, so.
And the little references to the original stuff, there's one part that I think I'm the only one that laughed, but because there's a part when they're attacking the Enterprise and Kirk first meets Krall and they're fighting, the score changes because there's a famous scene from the original Star Trek series that they show all the time of a shirtless Kirk fighting this like lizard looking alien with like a rock and stuff, and they're playing this like song. It's like dun, 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 and like that's the score changed to that song when Kirk is fighting Krall. I'm like, I'm the only one that got that, I think, because I'm like, ah, that's funny as shit. Like, but it's one of those things that, like, unless you're like a nerd, you don't remember that shit.
I think we were surrounded by fellow nerds.
But it was just such a small little reference that I was like, that's hilarious that they would stick that in there.
But I mean, that once again, you know, that just brings folks, you know, and makes it, you know, hey, this isn't a reboot, and it's not so far-fetched that it doesn't tie in or doesn't, you know, feel. And that's the thing, you know, with these is, you know, the pace of the movies felt good.
Like, yeah.
I didn't, you know, I wasn't like, all right, I'm ready for this to be over with, or this was drawn out, or, you know what, that felt rushed. Like, the continuity and everything was there, and it all felt, you know, I mean, I'm willing to go see it, you know, again, you know, I mean, just, it's really made a Star Trek fan out of me, where I really, you know, before these movies, wouldn't have considered myself a Trek fan.
And you can definitely see Justin Lin's influences on this, because, I mean, there's an epic motorcycle scene where Kirk finds a motorcycle and is using it as a distraction. But then toward the end, when, you know, they take out the swarm, there's like three surviving ships, Krull and his, like, you know, two right-hand men flying into the station, and they're chasing them with the Franklin, and it's like a car chase but with spaceships. I mean, it was like, you could definitely see that, like, you know,
almost
Gone
Fast in 60
seconds, or Fast and the Furious type stuff. It was so badass, that whole little chase scene there. I was like, how do you do an epic car chase in a freaking space movie? I mean, that was awesome. And as it turns out, Krull is actually the captain of the Franklin, who basically was a warrior from pre-Federation times. And when the Federation started, they made him a captain and sent him off on this mission. And he, you know, like, they crash, and he basically thinks he's been abandoned. So he kind of wants revenge on the Federation.
Yeah, you guys turned your back on me, left me for dead. Like, screw you.
But I think it was cool because there was so much, because as you see toward like the start of the movie, Kirk's logs and stuff, he's like, because basically this isn't William Shatner's Kirk, because in that timeline, he went up through the structure of command. You know, he earned his seat. But in this series, you know, Kirk just goes straight from the academy to a captain and is like just kind of born into war. You know, his first mission, he's having to battle. And even in the second movie, there's, you know, he's a guy who's gone through a lot of war, and now he's trying to be an explorer. And he doesn't really know what he's doing anymore. He's like, we're on this 3-year mission or 5-year mission, and I'm kind of bored. I don't even know if I want to be a captain anymore. And when they discover who Krull is and start, you know, going through his captain's logs of his missions and stuff, you see almost a parallel. He almost had the things like I was a warrior and now I'm, you know, an explorer. And it just kind of slowly, like, if things had been different, that could have been Kirk's fate. You know, like I said, you see that parallel of, him. And so, yeah, because, like, I mean, before they even go on this mission, Kirk's like asking for a promotion because he kind of, like, you know, wants to step up and, you know, become a
he's like, hey, I got it right, I saved the crew, like What more do you want?
and Spock too is like thinking about leaving Starfleet to kind of pursue what, you know, older Spock did as an ambassador, which is kind of interesting because like in the original series, that's what Kirk did after the 5-year mission was over. He became an admiral and stopped being, and then he spends like the rest of those movies trying to get back to being a captain. And you see that change of heart with him as well, because like after the thing's over, they're like, "Well, you've saved the base, you've saved everyone, you know, the promotion's yours." And he's like, "Admiral doesn't get to do a lot of flying, do they?" Like, no, really. He's like, "Well, I think I'll pass. I'll continue on my mission." But it was kind of cool seeing that parallels between Kirk and the bad guy who played by Idris Elba, who was a badass himself. Yes. Like I said, it was kind of like if you don't change your ways, this is what you could become. Yeah, you know? And I thought it was an interesting parallel that they drew there.
Yeah, no, I mean that was one of the things I think just, you know, really made it feel genuine. I don't know, you know, I mean it's just. I left with, you know, I mean, hell, I'm looking forward to, you know, whatever the next film has in store, you know, and
yeah, and I do like the way they handled the death of Spock in this one, you know, because like I said, Leonard passed away before this movie. It was in pre-production, so they kind of wrote that into the film of Spock getting notified of the death of Spock and him kind of trying to reevaluate his life, like, well, should I continue his work or, you know, continue my own life and stuff. And then also, you know, going forward, you know, Anton Yelchin passed away recently in a freak accident. And they've said they're not going to recast that part. So I'm wondering what they're going to do in the next movie. You know, if they're going to have, you know, him away on some other mission, like got transferred or whatever. But they're like, yeah, we don't want to put another actor in that Chekhov role. So it's going to be weird to see how they write that out in the next movie.
I'd be really curious to see how that plays out.
Because yeah, he was.
Sucks,
I mean,
man, 2016's been a tough year for a number of actors and actresses alike.
Like, and he was great in that part too. Good, I mean, you know, he was folks. Just like, you know, and he had such a bigger part in this movie too. I mean, he's like, you know, like probably one of the main guys in this movie. So they really fleshed out his character and his, because he's always like, you know, because he's like the youngest member and he's always like. He does his job, but he always seems like he's like, you know, in over his head. But he has the confidence, like, I will figure this out, Captain. Oh, but yeah, like so this, he really came into his own in this movie. And then the other thing that was interesting about this movie, there was kind of a controversy beforehand because they announced that they were going to make Sulu gay in this movie, and even the original Sulu, George Takei was like. That's not true to the original character. That's not how Gene Roddenberry envisioned it. So I was really worried that they were going to make it heavy-handed, like an over-the-top, like, oh, Sulu's gay, you know, like big. But they didn't. I mean, it was very true to the character. I mean,
you really, know, in fact, without that controversy, I probably, you know, wouldn't have even paid it any attention.
Yeah,
or anything.
I mean, like, so they didn't like really, you know. Put a huge emphasis on it. You see, he's got a picture of his kid or whatever. And when they go to the star base, you know, for like leave and refueling, you know, the kid shows up and like, and there's another guy with him and, you know, he puts his arm around him and they walk him like, oh, so he's got a husband. All right, cool. And like, you know, just on to the movie, you know, they didn't really kind of like make a big deal out of it, which like I said, that would have kind of, I don't know, it would have brought people out of the story. I mean, it's one thing to, I don't know. Lately, it seems like they've done stuff just to be politically correct in movies for the shock factor, and this one I think really honored, you know, Takei without like really, you know, making it a huge part of the story. Like, yeah. You know, and it also added a little bit of a personal element when they're going to defend the base. It's not just like, oh, we got to rescue these millions, billions of people. We also have family on this station, so yeah. it added a level of, you know, it's also personal at this point.
Yeah, it's not all just business.
No, yeah, I think it was worked very well into the storyline of the movie.
No, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. Like, I don't like, you know, some of the films where, you know, they're trying so hard to be, you know, politically correct. It's like, you know, do it naturally. Like, yeah. I feel like if you're trying to force it, then, you know, either you're pushing an agenda or something of that effect, but, you know, let it happen, you know, naturally. Like,
and Simon Pegg is a writer too. I mean, it's just
I mean,
it's insane how far he's come. Like, you know,
like
from Shaun
I mean,
of the Dead to something on this scale.
I mean, that was the thing for me is, you know, I was, you know, remembering, you know, some of the scripts from Shaun of the Dead, some of the other stuff. And I was like, you know, damn, like, yeah, extremely, extremely impressed.
I mean, hell, let him go write some Star Wars stuff now.
Shit, yeah. I mean, that was... I don't know. I mean, I thought, you know, I mean, I don't have anything bad to say about this film. Like, you know, that people can say what they want, but, you know, for me, shit, you know, I mean, I would pay again today to go and see it and, you know, wouldn't have any qualms about it.
I do like the speech when, you know, the whole, this is the Voyages of the Starship Enterprise. In the first movie, they had Leonard Nimoy give that speech that was always, you know, Kirk's voiceover in the original series. But in this one, they like it starts off with Kirk, but then it jumps from like character to character. So like everyone got like a few lines of that you know famous speech.
Yeah, I thought
speech.
That was awesome.
That was pretty cool. And the showing the construction of the Enterprise A, which is, you know, the second Enterprise that, you know, we got in whatever at the end of Voyage Home in the original series. So it's there's a precedence to blowing up the Enterprise. It just didn't really happen this quickly in the yeah. other movies.
Absolutely. I mean, this is one of the, you know, first times that I thought it was cool actually getting to see some of the ships and stuff produced, because you really didn't see that in the previous films. You know, once again, it just helped to put everything in perspective. Like, you know, I was like, man, my imagination is not near as expansive as what I'm visually seeing.
I know. I did get a little bit of a Halo flashback watching that big-ass space station they built. I was like, it's the ring planet.
Yeah.
but as we wrap things up, any final thoughts, highlights to the movies for you?
I mean, I just, as I said before, you know, each movie in its progression has just made me that much more of a fan and brought me that much more into a franchise that, you know, 15, you know, so years ago, I probably wouldn't have given a shot because it bored the shit out of me. Like, you know, but now, you know, I'm a fan, you know, I'm bought into the franchise. It's, you know, almost made me wanting to go back and watch some of the older stuff. And, you know, that way I can dial more into the references, you know, whereas, you know, kind of like, you know, I guess with Star Wars, you know, if you start with episode one, you're going to be like, what the fuck? Like, you know, this is garbage. But, you know, if you start with, you know, episode 4, 5, and 6, it's like, all right, I see the appeal. Now let me go give, you know, the prequels a shot. So, I mean, you know, for me, it's made me a fan where I really didn't feel like I was a fan before.
Yeah, it's like, and the highlights of this whole series has definitely been Scotty and McCoy. Those Carl Urban and Simon Pegg have made this series for me. And also, as we wrap up, any final thoughts on the flying pig?
I mean, to me, this is it's not a great cigar. It's a good cigar. You know, it's a cigar that I think is going to require a unique palate. You know, there's not, you know, if you don't like, you know, heavily smoked foods, or you don't like, you know, smoked porters, or, you know,
that'd be interesting thing to pair with a good smoked porter,
you know, or something to that effect, and you don't like those, you know, woody smoky notes, you're probably not going to like this cigar. But as somebody that enjoys barbecue, that enjoys being outdoors, that's, you know, sit there and roasted hot dogs on a stick and stuff like that, so you've gotten, you know, some of the flavors of the wood and stuff like that into your foods, to me, this is not a bad cigar.
It's definitely different. Like I said, if you want something that's just going to try a different flavor, it definitely doesn't smoke like a normal cigar. It's unfortunately, it's not a good podcasting cigar because it doesn't last the entire... like I said, it's about an hour smoke. We're usually smoking something a little bit longer so it'll last the entire duration of the show. So I may have to go get another cigar before we continue on. But with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
I can't stand it. I know you're with it. I'm a sensation. It's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
And welcome back to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. It's Beer 30. So, what are we drinking this week, Brad?
Well, we're drinking another brew here out of Savannah, Georgia.
As we go into darkness.
Yes. As we ascend into space and all that is black. I just saw the name of this beer and, you know, just went for it. So, this is Southbound Brewing Company's Black Circle. This is a double Cascadian dark ale. You know, more commonly, I would say this is more so a black IPA. However, it being a black IPA, the way that they went about brewing this is they actually, you know, used some special debittered German dark malts to give this more of a roasty chocolate flavor. So upon pouring this beer, you know, outside of the hoppy aroma and the citrus notes, if I looked at this in a glass, I would say it was a stout for all intent and purposes.
Yeah, it's some black stuff.
And, you know, even then, like, with the taste is there's a lot of malt, there's a lot of chocolate, there's a lot of things that remind me of a stout. It just has a hoppy back end to it, but it's not so over the top like, you know, some of, I guess to maybe compare like a Terrapin Hopsecutioner or something to that extent.
You can definitely smell the hops in it. I mean, it almost smells like, you know, when you're brewing and you add the hops to the boil, it's definitely got that, you know, hop aroma.
But, you know, this got a lot of earthy, you know, citrusy, you know, pine notes to it and stuff too. So, the other cool thing is I thought it was interesting that, you know, Southbound actually brewed this in collaboration with one of the local rock stations here, Rock 106.1. So I thought that was kind of cool. Like, you know, being
if I'm looking at their website, they're very music oriented. They're very much into pairing beer with music.
Yeah, so you know, I mean, I'm a big music nerd myself, so I like all types of music. So you know, I was like, all right, well, I get to try a new beer, and you know, I mean, I gotta say, I'm digging it so far. But you know, what are your thoughts, Joe?
I never have thoughts. It's... No, these are great. Like I said, I'm not a huge IPA fan, but this one has a, like I said, the malty chocolateness of, you know, almost stoutish, but with this that alcohol content and that little bit of hops kick at the end, it's not bad.
Yeah, and this comes in at about I think it's right at like 8.2% ABV, so you know it's up there on the ABV charts. You know, it's not quite double digit, but you know, it's definitely enough to get your mind in the right place.
Yep, and like I said, another local, you know, it's only got a 80 IBU rating, so it's not ridiculously hoppy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is, you know, there's enough there that, you know, you get the bitterness, but it's not so much that it turns me away from the beer like what a traditional IPA does. You know, an IPA a lot of times will just make me pucker up, and until I get buzzed, I don't want an IPA. You know, once I'm already buzzed or whatever, I don't really care what I'm consuming at that point. But, you know, if it's us podcasting or whatever, traditionally an IPA is not going to be my go-to.
Yeah, I think for me, IPAs have always been getting drunk beer because they're you always have like, you know, usually higher than average alcohol content. And like I said, you drink a six pack of it, you don't care if it's bitter or not after like the number one or two.
I mean, you get a few beers that come in at, you know, 10, 11%. It doesn't take much to get you right. At that point, you just get thirsty.
Yeah, this it's a pretty good beer. So what are you rating this one on the Untappd?
I think I'm at a, you know, probably right around a 3.75, maybe borderline 4 for me.
Yeah, it's not one I would drink all the time, but it is a good beer. I'll give you the 3.75.
Perfect.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
Yes, science! And welcome back. It's time for science. Ready to learn some stuff, Brad?
Absolutely.
Well, first off, you a fan of the Throne of Games or Games of Thrones or whatever winter's coming stuff going on?
Yeah, I mean, as much of it as I've seen, I'm really far behind in the game, but, you know, I'm a newly found addicted, you know.
Well, scientists have recently discovered two new species of ants, and they've named them after the two of the Game of Thrones dragons. There's a kind of a yellowish one and a black one, and they've named them Philidol Drogon and Philidol Viserion.
So basically Drogon and Viserion.
Yep. Apparently, Rygel has not gotten his own ant yet, but, you know, time will tell.
There's still many more species to be discovered yet.
Yeah, these things were discovered in New Guinea by Eli Sainat, however you pronounce that name. And like I said, they're basically like, yeah, we want to name them something cool that, you know, people would talk about instead of the traditional Latin names. We decided to name them after Game of Thrones.
I mean, that's pretty cool, though.
But they are weird looking. They have these, like, spines that, these, like, spikes that come out of their backs that, so far, they don't really know what they're used for. But they're very, like, creepy looking. I would, like, yeah.
I don't know, man. If I'm a predator or something and I see that, I'm like, nope. Not gonna taste good. Like, or, you know, not gonna feel good trying to eat that. So, I mean, I don't know, dude. Think about an anteater or something, like, you know.
Yeah, that would definitely get you.
A tongue catch a spike or something, like. You know, do they have any kind of, you know, a venom or anything?
Not
you
that
know?
They've discovered so far, but they're still, and they're, like I said, they initially thought the spikes were some kind of defense, but there's not really any kind of, like, muscular underneath them like there would be with, like, a shoulder or a moving part, so they don't know if they're there for just, like, you know, structural purposes or just to make them look scary. The research is ongoing. Yeah, but yeah, the pictures they post, I mean, even though, like, yeah, they have, like, a scale there, these things are, like, really freaking tiny. But if these things were, like, blown up to dragon size, it'd be some scary bastards.
Yeah, man.
I'm not going to want to mess with one of these things. Like, if they did a new version of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, like, you would not want to ride that ant. It would not be, like, a cute ant. It would...
No.
The thing of nightmares.
It's like the freaking velociraptor of ants, like, you know, looking at the claw.
Yeah. Big, and apparently, like, the worker or the soldier ants of this breed of ant, like, have mandibles strong enough to, like, crack a nut. So yeah, these things are kind of kind of badass little bastards.
Damn, that's pretty crazy. Holy crap!
Yeah, and since we talked about the swarm of ships and the new Star Trek Beyond, soon you'll be able to control drones with your mind.
Oh, yeah?
little music to add emphasis there.
Can I just state for the record that someone I absolutely hate autoplay on websites? Like, nothing pisses me off more than browsing to a website just to have, you know, either a shitload of ads pop up or something, or, you know, freaking autoplay videos, especially when there's, like, 7 videos on the page.
Researchers at Arizona State University have basically come up with a way to control a whole swarm of drones with your mind. By swarm, they're only up to 4 at this point. But that's, yeah, that's a start. Yeah, it's a small swarm. You know, you play an X-Wing, that's enough for a swarm. But yeah, you may need more ships more drones to officially call it a swarm. But basically, it's kind of looks stupid because it's almost like a swimming cap with, I think, 128 different electrodes that basically map the center, you know, map the functions of the brain. So, like, all right, it can tell when you're thinking, move left. They know what part of the brain is going to be stimulated when you're making that thought to move left or do, like, certain maneuvers. And instead of having to use a controller, the brain is much better at multitasking than your hands are. So, you know, it's able to control, like, several drones at once, which would be damn near impossible trying to do with, you know, your hands and whatnot.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I'm just watching some of the diagrams as the thoughts change and everything. It's like a butthole in your brain.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of weird. one of the questions that have been brought up though is like, you know, before this kind of turns into something large scale, like say, you know, military drones being controlled by thought instead of what happens when your mind wanders. It's like, you know, you start thinking like
collapses.
You're like, hot dogs. You know, are the drones going to blow up Oscar Mayer Wienermobile or something? But supposedly they say like no. Because the way this works is it knows what regions of your brain's control function are certain functions. So unless it sees one of the pre-programmed maneuvers, it's not going to, you know, react on your own if you start thinking, you know, because like, I mean, I have a hard time concentrating for 5 minutes before my mind starts wandering. So yeah, if, you know, if the drones have started drifting, it would, it would not be good.
Ooh, piece of candy.
Exactly. Oh, I just saw something shiny and blew up Korea. I mean, it's...
You say it like it's a bad thing. As long as it's in North Korea.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, when the Terminators take over, we can control them with our mind, apparently. And speaking of weird robotic things, we've talked a lot about self-driving cars lately. Well, now... engineers from Honda and SoftBank want to make self-driving cars that can talk to you about your feelings. Basically rolling psychiatrists, I guess. But, you know, SoftBank is they've developed, like, the first robot that can actually
detect... Does this classify as a medical device? Am I going to have to pay a tax for that? Like,
can I have to pay a freaking
psychiatrist
fee?
You know, well, I mean, I'm just wondering, you know? I mean, there's debate right now that, you know, with a lot of the health apps and everything else on your cell phone, is that now considered a medical device? So, you know, like, your car starts doing the same thing. Like, before long, it's going to be like, oh, nope. This is no longer classified vehicle. It's classified medical. So, yeah, I just hope I didn't give some lobbyist or some politician an idea.
SoftBank developed the first robot that can detect human emotion named Pepper that basically can pick up on your, I guess, your body expressions and your facial. So, you know, since at this point, you know, the driver is kind of becoming redundant, you know, what are you going to do for that hour or so stuck in your car? You know, if you're the AI in the in the car is up to a level where it can engage you and ask you about your day, like, yeah, hey, why are you pissed off, man? And like, yeah, have a conversation with you. I mean, it's, yeah, people who don't want to talk about their feelings with real people. I mean, it gives you something to do on that hour long commute to work.
Hey, Jarvis, had a really tough day at the office.
Exactly. Your car could be like Jarvis.
Hulk tried to smash.
I mean, if it's like Jarvis, then I'm all for it. You know, like that whatever 6-7 hour drive we took to Ohio. You know, if you're by yourself, yeah. I may not be interested in a car that can psychologically diagnose me. But if somebody just keep me entertained on a road trip,
we no longer have friends and families. We communicate with our cars and our smartphone devices and.
I could tell them to go out and like ride around and unlock my freaking Pokemon eggs too. But yeah, it's kind of weird. I mean, on one thing, it's kind of interesting that because I know like the downside of self-driving cars, if I'm not the driver in a vehicle, I'm like immediately want to go to sleep. Like if I have nothing to do, and it gets to the point where the AI is so advanced that it can, you know, control the car without me having to watch it every second. Dude, I'm going to be straight asleep unless something's there to keep my attention. So
it should be the road and your surroundings.
Like I'm saying, if the car is driving, there's nothing for me to do. I'm gonna be falling asleep. I know that when I'm not the driver, I'm like, dude, it immediately makes me sleepy.
I don't know, man. I don't know about you, but I mean, I just know when I get in the car with somebody, like, I don't trust anybody's driving more than I trust my own. And I'd have to say that the same probably goes for some robotic technology. Like, I'm still going to be looking for the flaw or the hell no, because when shit hits the fan and you
decide. This from the guy that slept the entire way to Ohio, so.
If I'm going to die, I'm going to die peacefully.
I mean, start a new podcast.
Plus, I was on like 2 hours of sleep.
start a new podcast, like you and your car. Welcome to the Car Nerds Podcast. My co-host, Jarvis.
It's like, damn, about time you got somebody entertaining.
So, what do you think about having a always having? That's another thing too. Sometimes I just want to be alone in my car and not deal with like anyone. So if I gotta like freaking talk to a fucking computer now, like I'm like, dude, this is my quiet time. This is my like hour to like think about stuff because there's nothing else I can do except sit in traffic. I don't want to have to talk to Jarvis.
You hurt your car's feelings. It becomes upset and gets fewer miles per gallon. The higher you, you know,
heart just runs like into a freaking wall.
The car's like, well, you're miserable. I'm miserable. I'm taking us both out. Like that's the reason you need to be alert because when the car decides that it's you over the car, then that's an issue.
But then again, if the car depressed, it may go to Mexico. That was a weird news article I saw today that a guy wanted to kill himself, so he went down to Mexico and then spent a week doing cocaine and hookers and decided he wanted to live. It's not a recommended treatment for depression, but apparently it worked for this one dude.
Congratulations, one dude.
And also kind of Star Trek related, one of Einstein's biggest theories that has finally, well, not been proven, but we have big evidence that he was correct. Because a lot of high-end physics is just theoretical. I mean, we have these theories that based on other things we know, this is how the universe should work. But there's really no way to test those theories or you know, that's why most science is called theories. Because unless something is tested and repeated over and over and over again for
it
like
can't
years.
It can become a law.
Yeah, that's why like gravity is, you know, Newton's law of gravity. Because that stuff is like we've not really found any kind of correction in that. But, you know, Einstein's theory of relativity is one of those that's still in the theory stages. And one of the things he theorized was that time and space could be manipulated. It's not a static thing. And recently, one of the parts of that theory is something they call gravitational waves. And, you know, ripples in the fabric of space-time. And it's like it was predicted years ago by Einstein, but recently two black holes collided and it actually sent out a ripple in space-time that we were able to detect. So this is the first time we've had actual proof that gravitational waves are a thing.
Interesting.
I mean, and this is like kind of have huge implications because like during this event, like time literally sped up, slowed down, and sped up, like kind of ripples on the, you know, a wave of a calm palm when you throw a rock into it. I mean, this is the first time we've seen something kind of shake the fabric of the universe. And like I said, and it's like a lot of your sci-fi stuff, like I said, we talk about Star Trek. That's one of the theories of how warp technology works is it's not necessarily making you go faster. It's kind of making two points come closer together. Like I said, you can, you know, take the fabric of reality and kind of fold it. So now you're not traveling 10,000 million miles. You're traveling a lot shorter distance because you're kind of going, you know, you're shrinking the universe. And this stuff is showing that, you know, it's almost probable. You know, we don't know how to manipulate it ourselves now, but we now know the science that technology is based on is actual science and not, you know, science fiction.
That's awesome. I mean, it's definitely cool to start seeing, you know, the theories and everything stacking up to, you know, progress as we progress and, you know, work their ways to become laws and everything. So that's pretty sweet.
That's one of the things that we've, you know, we didn't talk about when we were talking about the main segment is a lot of the stuff that was science fiction back in the 60s that Star Trek, you know, displayed has become reality. I mean, flat screen TVs, cell phones, like even those little, you know, medical computers that scan you. We all have some version of that now that at the time when the original Star Trek was around was strictly science fiction. I mean, that show definitely inspired generations of scientists. And like I said, it's weird seeing when you go back and watch some of the original stuff, like the what then was super fictional future technology is we're now starting to see like, you know, some of that stuff, you know, being reality and other parts of it, you know, in the early stages of becoming reality, which is crazy.
Yeah. No, I mean, I definitely think it's interesting to see, you know, where, you know, people feel like we should be as far as our advancements of technology today versus where we actually are and where we're going. So that's freaking awesome.
And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
We are the Metal Geeks Podcast, and on this show we have heavy metal, comic books, video games, movies, theme parks, and more.
Wait, comics?
Yep.
And movies?
Exactly.
Video games?
Yeah.
Metal?
Of course.
How does theme parks fit in this?
It just does. All of us Metal Geeks can be found at MetalGeeks.net.
At Metal Geeks for Twitter.
Metal Geeks on Instagram.
And Metal Geeks on the Facey Space. You can also find us on iTunes. Subscribe today.
Metal Geeks.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News. So up next we got some release dates going on for a little film called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows. And so this is going to be coming out in 4K, Blu-ray, DVD, digital. Looks like September 6th. So I'm really excited. I thought one of the cool things about, you know, the Turtles is the whole marketing campaign. So there's actually a freaking 2-movie Blu-ray gift set that actually has, like, the freaking Turtle Van as a collectible metal lunchbox that I thought was pretty sweet.
Yeah, I've seen, like, collections of, like, the old cartoon series or I might have been in the original movies in a Turtle Van. But, yeah, that's cool that the new thing's coming out in that.
Yeah, I'm also curious, you know, about, you know, some of the, you know, additional, you know, bonus content and everything else. You know, it looks like we're going to get some deleted scenes. You know, some of the Easter eggs that may have been missed.
Does it come with 10-inch Mutant Ninja Turtles?
It did not. Jeez, way to just take this way in a whole nother direction. And
I always do.
Yeah. Why is it always got to be during my segment? Like, talk about 10-inch turtles during the science. Like, that's a breakthrough. And if you don't know what I'm talking about,
just Google it. We're not going to tell you. Just Google it.
Make sure you do it in a private setting. NSFW. So no children, no work, IT policy infringements. May you be disturbed. But you just really, you know, yeah, absolutely.
So what's next?
You were talking about the special or the newly discovered ants and trying to tie in Game of Thrones. So I figured I'd tie in some Game of Thrones with that. So HBO has now confirmed that Game of Thrones will end with season 8.
Is that the next season or?
Yeah, I think, that'll be the next season. So,
They've gone past where George R. R. Martin, like, actually wrote stories. So now they're like, yeah, we're in, like, unfinished territory, so we're going to wrap this up.
There's been, you know, talks of, like, hey, we'd love to continue, you know, on out, you know, through another 10 seasons or, you know, whatever, but I mean, I don't know, you know, is it, I mean, the books were great. So far, the seasons have been great, you know, but you start getting beyond that, like, what's there to compare to? Is it going to lose the greatness or is that going to continue? Like,
yeah, I mean, every story's got to have an ending, especially when you're dealing with, you know, literary works. And there's real no ending to the story, but how long can you push out the Game of Thrones? I mean, eventually somebody's got to win that bastard.
Everybody dies. Nobody wins.
Exactly. And then the robots take over. This completely jump genres, and all of a sudden it goes to, like, way in the future. It's like sci-fi Westeros.
Oh, gosh. I mean, that could almost work. I mean...
Game of Starships.
Game of Starships. Yeah. I'm not opposed to the idea. Up next, a little bit of Transformers news regarding Transformer 5. It appears that Hot Rod is going to be in this film. And, you know, I guess it's, you know, Bumblebee's brother-in-law, you know,
brother-in-law.
Yeah, like Bumblebee's brother in arms, you know.
Yeah, Hot Rod was the, if you watch the old animated Transformers movie, Hot Rod was the one who eventually took over for Optimus Prime after he was killed and became Rodimus Prime. So I wonder if they're going to kill off Optimus in the next movie.
I don't know. Could be, you know, some heavy foreshadowing there, though.
I want a live-action Unicron. I mean, if they're going to do the whole Death of Prime story, you got to give us Unicron.
So, I don't know. You know, maybe this is a step toward that direction.
And the Junkions, voiced by Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh, shit.
I mean, too bad Leonard Nimoy's not around anymore to voice Unicron, but... Maybe Zachary Quinto could take over for him there.
Just keep the legacy alive, man.
Yeah.
So up next is I want to talk a little bit about Suicide Squad. So, you know, critics came out, they gave their review, and, you know, basically, oh, it sucks, blah, 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 blah. So, you know, now that people are actually getting out and seeing it, I haven't, you know, run across any of my friends or, you know, anybody I've talked to about the film that said, hey, this sucks.
Except for the one tweet we got that was like, even if Margot Robbie showed her tits, like, it wouldn't save this movie. But like I said, we've not seen it yet, so we can't give you a review. Maybe by next episode we'll have seen it and we can talk about it a little further.
But, I mean, you know, so what I'm getting at here is, so Kevin Smith is actually, you know, given his opinion, and I typically trust Kevin's opinions. He hasn't steered me wrong too much, but, you know, I mean, he's saying that, you know, they made some magic DC proud. So, I mean, you know, and what my, you know, friends and people like that have talked to me about the film is, you know, was it a good summer film? Yeah, absolutely. Was it the greatest film of all time? Probably not, but, you know, people have come out
but
and said...
But is it better than Batman v Superman?
Everybody has said yes that I have talked to on
But then
that
again,
one.
That's a pretty low bar to step over. You could be mediocre and still be better than Batman v Superman. It's the only thing that scares me is the whole that they... That was in production when... Before Superman Batman was released, when we still had a dark DC universe. And, you know, now it looks like with Justice League and Wonder Woman and the new stuff coming out, they've decided to lighten up a little bit. And the fact that they had to do a whole bunch of reshoots on this after Batman v Superman came out, that kind of worries me that they may have, like, you know, you try to lighten up a dark subject, and once it's already, you know, anytime you try to change a thing that's already made, it runs the risk of just screwing it up worse.
Yeah, I mean... I don't know. I'm going to go into it with an open mind. I mean, one thing I do have a high expectation for is the soundtrack, because people have, you know, said that this movie, you know, the soundtrack has just been absolutely awesome.
I got to say, the Purple Lamborghini song I did not hate, or the Avril Lavigne song was also pretty good. But then there's the whole, the Suicide Squad movie, it kind of needs to be like Deadpool. It kind of needs to get that full R rating, but so... I don't know how far they're going to push things in Suicide Squad.
I don't know. I mean, I'm wondering if they're going the direction where they're going to do a, you know, R-rated release. You know,
yeah, they've already announced that that's going to happen. That they're going to release an R-rated cut on video. But that's kind of weird. I mean, I've not seen the R-rated version of Batman v Superman yet, but everyone I've talked to said it actually improved the movie. But I just don't know about that whole production model that, all right, theater's PG, video is going to be R-rated. I mean, it forces you to see the movie twice, and like I said, I don't know. The R-rated content, seeing it without seeing the first movie, you know, may make things better, but like once I've already seen the movie, I'm like, I don't really care that it got an extra 15 minutes worth of footage. I know how the movie ends. Unless I like really like it, I don't need the director's cut.
And if you need to see Harley's boobs, just go back and rewatch Wolf of Wall Street.
Exactly.
Like, I don't know. Like, I don't agree with that model, you know. And I, you know, I mean, when I think Suicide Squad 2, like, you know, once again, I'm flashing back to the graphic novels and stuff like that, and those weren't never designed to be kid friendly in the first place. So why, you know, cut something down and worry about a PG-13, you know, rating? Go with the R. And
speaking,
you know,
of R-rated, I don't think we'd seen Killing Joke last time we recorded.
No, we did get around to watching The Killing Joke, and I gotta say, man, like I've seen some negative, you know, stuff about it, but I didn't hate the movie.
No, I mean it with those voice actors, it reminded me of a dark version of the Batman animated series, and Mark Hamill's Joker is truly freaking creepy in that movie. I mean, you can see why he's such a threat watching Killing Joke.
But, I mean, you know, I mean, that was the thing, too. Like, you've now recently have, you know, fell in the deep, dark world of...
Dude, I've not been online for, like, a week because I've been playing fucking Arkham Knight, like, every free second I have. And it has sucked up my life. I should have never have bought a PlayStation 4 because I don't do anything except play freaking Batman.
But, you know, Mark Hamill, you know, doing the Joker in that game is just fucking awesome. Like, that is,
just,
you know...
It's probably one of the best written games I've played in a while. Just the story of it is that whole like slow descent into madness that Batman goes through, and yeah, having you know Joker there like just constantly in your head is just freaking hysterical and just disturbing at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like I'm with you on a couple of parts where the game has actually caught me off guard a couple of times, and I'm like, oh shit, I didn't expect that. You know,
that damn Man-Bat side mission scared the shit out of me. It was like middle of the night, I'm sitting way too close to the TV, I go to crawl up on a ledge, and that freaking bat like jumps up on the screen. I'm like, I shouldn't be like crapping my pants playing a freaking video game. It's
especially not Batman.
And what is funny is Joker does the same damn thing to you later in the game, and he's like, ha, look at the look on your face. I'm like, fuck you, Joker. It's
like, damn it. But I don't know, you know, I mean, like I said, 2BD, we'll see, you know, when we get around to seeing it, we'll give our, you know, opinion on Suicide Squad and everything. I mean, I'm going to go into it with an open mind, and, you know, I mean, I typically don't agree with critics anyway, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's
going to be a big change, though, because, you know, seeing The Killing Joke and playing the game. You know, now we, you know, are going to see the Jared Leto, you know, Joker.
Juggalo Joker?
Yeah. Oh, JJ.
Oh. Yeah, and it's like, it's weird seeing her as, I mean, she looks good as Harley Quinn, but I'm just so used to the voice of Tara Strong when I think of Harley Quinn that part's going to be weird. But yeah, I mean, we'll probably see it, you know, in the next week or so and give you a review of it next episode.
And up next is, I know your unfathomable, you know, disgust for reboots. So, you know, I had to throw a little bit of horror movie news, you know, in here. So, apparently, Pumpkinhead is going to get a modern do-over courtesy of Peter Block, who was the executive producer for Saw.
That might be interesting.
So, you know, I mean...
Pumpkinhead was a weird one too. So it's not one of those that I care enough to that it's going to be a reboot. Like the Friday the 13th and the Nightmare on Elm Street reboots were horrific, but the Halloween one was pretty awesome. So I mean it's hit or miss when you get into reboots.
Yeah. So it looks like this is you know planned to you know be released in 2017 sometime. But I mean, there's been a ton of freaking Pumpkinhead sequels and everything else. So I don't know, man. Like I'm curious to see it with modern technology, and then you know some of the stuff that we've seen with the Saw films, things of that nature. I don't know. Like it may just work. If nothing else, I mean, I'm sure I'll get a laugh or something. But I mean. I like a cheesy horror movie.
Oh yeah, I'm down. I mean, I went back and watched Pumpkinhead. This weird ass movie. So yeah, a new interpretation of it's going to be. At least maybe they'll give a better, you know, puppet. Yeah. Just a CGI Pumpkinhead or something.
So, you know, we talked about Star Trek back in the main segment. You know, we talked about how visually appealing, how, you know, immersive it was to see it on the big screen and everything. How would you like to experience Star Trek from a virtual reality standpoint?
Is there going to be green women? Can I play the Kirk R-rated version? It's
like, no, you cannot hide under that bed. That is out of the game.
I mean, yeah, that's one of the things I think would be awesome. I know for a while there out in Vegas, they had like a Star Trek experience thing, ride you could go to. But yeah, if you can delve into the Star Trek world in the comfort of your own living room, all for it.
So, you know, Ubisoft is now coming out with Star Trek Bridge Crew, which will basically be on virtual reality-enabled systems. You know, basically it's going to, you know, put you, your friends, you know, in, you know, the heart of the starship. And I got to say, watching the trailer and some of the gameplay stuff, like, it looked pretty sweet. Like,
yeah, we didn't talk a whole lot about E3, but yeah, this is one of the things that kind of was announced at that. Because, I mean, I think in October the PlayStation VR system's coming out. If you got an extra $400 to spend, or, you know, Oculus and the Vive's coming out. So, yeah, that, from the trailer, it looked badass, because basically it's not just a single-player game. It's like, it's, and that's one thing with the virtual reality games we've seen so far. They've all been kind of a single-person experience or a multiplayer online experience. But with this, you can sit in a room with all your friends, as long as everyone has a VR headset, and can play this game, and basically each person is a different member of the bridge crew, and you have to work together to accomplish the mission. So someone's playing the engineer, someone's playing the whoever the guy that drives the ship is, someone's the captain, and you're giving orders, and people are flipping buttons and all that stuff, and that's going to be kind of wild in doing that all in one room together.
I hit the wrong button and blew the airlocks. We're all dead.
Exactly. And I think for the trailer, it was hilarious because they had LeVar Burton. I can't remember her name, but she played 6 of 9 on Voyager, and even had Carl Urban from the new. It's like they had someone from each Star Trek universe to sit down and play this
and
game.
And dude, LeVar Burton was spot on, you know,
the
with
dude
his,
knows
yeah.
his track. I mean, he's playing like Captain or whatever, and he's like throwing out all kind of words and stuff.
It's like, holy shit, cast this guy.
And he's like, yeah, I kicked ass at the engineer role, which is, yeah, he was the chief engineer, so it's kind of hilarious. He's like, I know my role.
So, yeah, I thought that, you know, that bit of a news tied into the main segment, and, you know, I don't know, it looks interesting. I just really don't know about the idea of having to fork out additional monies on a, you know, another console or PC system. Like,
man, you have a PS4, we just need the headset upgrade.
Yeah. It's just getting a little bit ridiculous and, you know, like trying to keep up with hardware and everything to that effect. But
yeah, I
mean, hopefully it becomes a hit and it's not just something where we have a bunch of expensive paperweights.
Yeah. Oh, that's so, like so many of those Guitar Hero guitars filling up room in the closet. or some of the other... Oh. Remember the old Virtual Boy?
Yeah.
That thing did not last very long.
And what was it? There was also the VR headset that, you know, had the single lens that you flipped down and I mean, I was a kid when I had that thing, but
from all things I've seen about the PlayStation VR and the Oculus stuff coming out, I'm like, I'm going to have to do it. I'm
going to yes.
Especially the PlayStation, I think it's got like 50 games at launch. And supposedly it's going to be like a Star Wars game where you can like a space fighting game. I'm like, I'm down.
Absolutely. So, any additional news or anything?
Dragon Con's coming up. Next episode, we're probably going to do a kind of a Dragon Con update. There's been a lot of changes and stuff with this upcoming year.
A lot of changes
year.
And some additions. So I'm excited. Yeah.
And also, like I said, this is our first year of attending as actual media. We don't really have our schedule yet, so hopefully by next episode we'll know where we're going to be and what we're going to be doing. So, you know, or like I said, yeah, if y'all want to, if you're coming to Dragon Con, y'all want to meet up, have a cigar, shoot us an email, you know, at cigarnerdpodcast@gmail.com or, you know, Twitter @cigarnerdpod. Also, there's at least two events we know of. The Range 15 movie that we've talked about a lot of times. They're trying to do a Dragon Con showing of that. Tickets are currently available on Tug. They still need to sell enough tickets to make it happen. So it'll be, I think the 18th is the cutoff date. So if you want to go see that at Dragon Con, you know, go out and see it. At least one cast member has been announced that he is going to be at Dragon Con Friday and Saturday. So, you know, or Thursday and Friday. So come see the movie with one of the dudes that's in the movie. Also, the Dragon Con cigar group that we talked about last year. We're having our meetup again. It's going to be in the newly opened, Prohibition style bar at the Red Phone Booth. Which is a bar/cigar lounge. That's walking distance from the con. It's pretty much right next door, and it's a new venue that looks amazing from all we've seen so far. That's going to be Thursday night at I think it's 8:30. Like I said, you look up the Dragon Con Cigar Group on Facebook, and the event page is on there telling you exactly when that's going to be. And we will probably be there as well, since we are the cigar nerds. But hopefully by next episode we'll have a little bit better idea what our schedule is going to be. With that, follow us on iTunes and Stitcher. Subscribe. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Cigar Nerd Pod. Our email is at cigarnerdpodcast@gmail.com. Shoot us an email. We're available on iTunes, Stitchers, wherever podcasts are sold. We're on the ESO network at esopodcast.com, and we're also on our website, cigarnerdpodcast.com. And with that, live long and prosper. We out.
And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.